Hey, welcome to episode 18 of Security Nation. I am your host, Kyle Flaherty. Got to speak with two gentlemen today, Jack Dunham and Rob Barrett over at UL, or Underwriter Laboratories. If you don't know UL, you do know UL. You've seen their logo. You've probably seen it a dozen times already. Look at your door frame, turn over your keyboard, look maybe on your phone, your monitor. There's a bunch of stuff, certainly a bunch of stuff at your house too. And this is a company that's been around for 100 and, you know, some odd years. I think it's 120, maybe more years. You could probably look that up on the Google. But the point being, Jack and Rob are leading a conversation now, and UL is leading a conversation now in a lot of ways around the cybersecurity in automotive space. And so they've actually created a automotive research lab and gone through a lot of things to really help manufacturers and suppliers alike understand the vulnerabilities that are out there and provide them with information so that they can help with this. We've seen a million, and we talk about this in the pod. We see all these big, you know, hacking stunts out there with the Jeep or whatever it is that make Wired and other magazines. You know, manufacturers and suppliers, according to Jack and Rob, and certainly from a lot of the things that I see, want to help and want to fix a lot of these problems. They want to give the consumer a lot of really cool whiz-bang functionality and innovation, but they also realize that they got to get ahead of the security thing, especially as we move into autonomous driving. And so, or autonomous vehicles, I guess. That's another topic, you know, that we hit on. We discussed the Ford Innovation Center in Palo Alto, potential uses of user behavior analytics and, you know, these situations, shedding more eyes or shedding more light, putting more eyes into this problem, and really how it's going to evolve moving forward. For those of us who have been in the network security side of the business, this can be remindful of the early days. But in this case, we have a highly regulated industry like automotive that's getting a lot of attention, obviously, from the government and other things. And so I think you're going to see more and more of this and more discussion around this. And certainly Jack and Rob themselves are the ones actually leading a lot of these conversations. And it was just a pleasure to talk with them. I think you're really going to see the passion that they have for the mission of UL and bringing safety to more people. So please enjoy episode 18 of Security Nation.
You're listening to Security Nation with host Kyle Flaherty.
I felt like a natural progression for a company like UL that, you know, it's been known for product safety and what have you for, you know, 124-year-old company, actually, right? Went through the Great Depression and is still here.
Yeah.
And so it just seemed as the modern day world, you know, sort of evolves and we think of safety, less and less of our world is actually mechanical. More and more of our world, you know, is based on software. And there is a safety side to that that just made sense. And then when you put the vehicle involved, it's that beautiful hybrid to me for UL that there's a mechanical aspect. I'm driving my car down the road and it can be crashed into a wall or whatnot. And then there's this side that this new world order of, you know, the idea of taking control of my car from a laptop is just kind of a brand new frontier, but makes sense for the company because we are known for that sort of safety. So then it was really a matter of attracting people like Jack and like Craig or whatnot to come aboard and say, yeah, I see how UL plays a role in this. And now to get the word out that many people do still think of UL as kind of that old world company with that sticker on the back of a light switch, right?
Right.
However, you know, bringing people like these guys together and like yourself, like giving us the opportunity to tell people that we have moved into a cyber role.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, I actually worked with you guys. I was at a company called Breaking Point Systems about 8-9 years ago. Actually, H.D. Moore was there. A bunch of folks were there. And we actually worked with you guys on a network system testing. You know, I think it was UL 5383 or whatever it was. I'm sure I'm getting the number wrong, so people will tweet at me. But
we won't know.
Yeah, right. And so it was one of those things that was my first experience actually with UL beyond the fact that, you know, I saw the sticker on my, or, you know, from everything, right? From devices to your door frame.
Yeah.
And so I want to dive more into the automotive stuff, but I want to rise up a little bit too and have you guys talk about, like, for those people who don't know UL, except for the fact that they see the logo, and they don't even know in a lot of essences that they've seen this logo probably 100 times today already, right. Because it's all over the place. Like, what's the mission? Because it is fascinating that the company's been around for so long doing ultimately the same type of thing, at least from a mission standpoint, but it continues to evolve as we all evolve.
Yeah. Well, the mission is twofold. One is to provide some sort of base level validation that your car is reasonably safe from sort of like high school kids bored in their basement trying to mess with your car, or maybe not your car, just any car they can get at, you know, over the internet wirelessly, right? And then the second is to push manufacturers and tier one suppliers, and actually all tier suppliers, toward a model of more transparency, right? Because as we know in the open source world, and, you know, we sort of have a ready example in the comparison of like how Linux has evolved security wise versus Microsoft, like every Microsoft operating system product, which is always rife with security issues. And the sort of difference is that there are many, many eyes on the security issues as it pertains to like Linux, and fewer eyes for like, say, Microsoft products, right? And this is all by way of analogy, but the point is the more eyes, the more light you shine on it, the better security can be. So that's what we're trying to do.
And in that, you know, what are the tactical stuff that you do, you know, to actually shed that light?
So essentially, right, we work with people like Craig and other security experts, because we are ourselves at this point by no means we don't consider ourselves security experts, and we're not attempting to sort of lead the industry, at least yet. What we're attempting to do is reproduce things that other people have done and shown, hey, this, and show, hey, this actually is a valid concern. This sort of test needs to be a part of a suite of tests that auto manufacturers should subject their cars to before they put them on the road.
And that information, so you talked about the suppliers, you talked about the auto manufacturers. How do they take that, and what are they doing about it now?
Let me add something, Jack. I'm sure you'll have something to say for this too, but what's been interesting is what you alluded to before when you say, you know, kind of UL and who we are. The company, you know, starting as a nonprofit, really has always had a mission that was to help the public, right, and to ensure people's safety. And people at the very top of UL, which is, you actually believe the mission, right? And so it's not just some corporate speak for money. So when we've gone to the automotive manufacturers and kind of explained it, I think something really key is what Jack just said, is that we're not approaching this like, we're not saying we're hackers, right? We're definitely not hackers. We're not necessarily like the, you know, security experts in the industry, but we are very good at being the gatekeepers. And with, you know, with very professional people like Jack, or like he said, working with Craig, or, you know, John Ellis, another guy we've been starting to work with. Yeah. You know, he's an ex Ford guy.
Yeah.
So making these connections and people that we have at our disposal like that, we're in a very good and unique position to go to the automotive manufacturers with this, with solid information to say, these are valid and reasonable concerns. You know, Jack will talk more to, but you know, we always use this analogy. If it takes $1 million, a PhD, and a supercomputer a year to hack the car, it's probably not something we should spend time on, right? Because you're never going to completely secure the vehicle, right? However, we can give you this fairly high level feeling of validation that says we've checked all the obvious stuff, and the general public can feel pretty good about this. And by the way, Mr. Ford, no OEM, you know, we're trying to help you make a better vehicle. We're not saying that, you know, okay, it's unhackable.
Yeah. Right?
That's not the statement.
And has the, like, what's the response been from the manufacturers and suppliers? Is this something where they're really leaning in and trying to get that? Was there massive confusion? Was there pushback? How has it been?
So Rob will jump in on this too. It varies per manufacturer, which is probably not shocking. But it seems like, right, the more and we won't mention like specific manufacturers,
sure,
or tier suppliers, but some companies are very forward looking and they understand that this is going to become a concern, and they sort of see, you know, they don't take the like really now, by now it's classic, the Miller and Vlasic Jeep hack from last year. They don't sort of take that as a one-off. They take it as a bellwether, and that's really smart. Other manufacturers, you can like, you can demonstrate, hey, your device is really easy to get to. I can build a simple, OpenBTS based IMSI catcher. I can like discover your device. I can send text messages to it. I can configure it, you know, all with no authentication. The strategy is basically just to ignore that. And I don't think that's evil, right? I actually understand why that is, because if you have sort of like limited resources and you operate on a thin margin, you know it's a problem, but you may feel that the time to address it isn't now because the pain isn't there yet. You know what I mean? The pain for them is going to be the motivation to change.
Right.
So Rob, had something to add to that. I know I can feel
it. You can feel the pressure.
I just couldn't decide. I'm like, I thought you said that so well. I was like, I don't want to be redundant, but I mean, the only thing I would add at all is that we are definitely approaching, well, like being forthright, like for example, this division at UL, we have no salespeople. We're not out pounding on people's doors, trying to sell them a product. We're really focusing on doing something good. Like it's one of those deals where you wake up in the morning, and you're like, hey, what did I accomplish today? And half the time us in computers, a paper didn't even go from point A to point B at the end of the week, right? You're like, what really moved, right? And so we're focusing on that effort and really trying to help these people and help the OEMs, help tier ones. And so I think even the ones that have been a little bit reluctant are kind of saying, we're opening the kimono. We're giving you the test cases we run. We're giving you the information. We're not trying to be guarded about this. We're trying to say, let's move everything forward. And so even those reluctant ones, like Jack saying, we're hoping, and we're starting to see some of them come around to realize we're not going to the media to expose anything, to be like trying to get you to buy our company.
Right.
They're not buying UL.
right. Yeah. Right. And there's nothing. Well, I don't want to say there's nothing in it for you. Of course there is. It's the mission of of safety, right? And what you guys try to provide, but it's not as if you have this big service that you're going to then roll up into them. I guess.
Right. I mean, UL is, I mean, we will make money from this, and we have been. It's just that the issue that puts us in a unique experience is a smaller lab would be much more threatened and much more in a position where saying it's about the dollar. Well, 124 years old, there's not a lot of companies in America that are older than UL, and our revenue is quite charming. And that's nice because it puts us in a position where guys like Jack and I can sit back and we can try to look at this and say, what's the best thing to do to ensure some level of public safety, to provide the OEMs with a value?
Yeah.
And we don't have to count every penny to do it. And, we freely send our test cases. If a company comes in and says, hey, we're interested in running through some tests with you, Jack's team put together here's what we're going to do. We're not trying to hide it from you. We're saying we're a second set of eyes. I mean, ask Volkswagen if they would have liked a second set of eyes at this point, right?
Right, of course. Well, and that goes to actually the question that, I had when we say that, there were some that saw the GPAC as a bellwether. There's other people who maybe didn't see it that way, et cetera. Was this something they were all kind of waiting on, or did it truly take everyone kind of by surprise? Because you guys have been doing, I'm looking at your backgrounds a little bit. Obviously, you've been playing in these spaces for a little bit. Was this a big shock to folks?
I think it was a huge shock to Chrysler because I don't think that they had sort of prior to this, Miller and Vlasic had also published research on, hey, if we can plug into the CAN bus, we can affect actual, physical vehicle systems. And that was sort of, I forget what vehicle that was. But it was sort of ignored because the idea was, yeah, but you have to have physical access to the car. And so it's sort of a specialized circumstance, and who's going to let some stranger plug an OBD2 device into there, this one though, sort of showed that you can bridge systems, right? So it was this very ultimately the attack was not as sophisticated as people would have assumed. I mean, it was, don't get me wrong, it was very sophisticated, but they went through a lot of research avenues. If you've ever read the original white paper that they wrote, they went through a lot of research avenues exploring vulnerabilities. And what they finally went with didn't wind up being like incredibly, incredibly complicated. Mm. It was sophisticated and clever, but it wasn't like, wow, you have to be so smart to mount this attack. But what was unique about it was that it, you know, it was literally a sort of, you know, a bridging attack. It bridged from the, you know, telematics unit to the IVI to the CAN bus, right? And that was unique. And I don't think that, I'm sure smart guys that maybe don't get paid a lot of attention within their own organizations had sort of imagined scenarios like this, but I think it was sort of discounted as being hard to discover, possibly, you know, by very, very upper management, right? And once this actually happened and was demonstrated, I think that opened people's eyes to the real, real possibilities.
And do you guys see, you know, one of the things that we obviously talk about here is just the end user in a lot of cases. Do you think that there's a general knowledge now of the potential kind of risks that are out there?
I will tell you, when I talk to people about what I do, and I'm sure Rob will confirm the same thing, people have a general sense. They have this sort of like evolving sense that things are not as safe as they seem, and that, you know, all your sort of electronic conveniences are also potentially, and I'm not just talking about cars,
of course,
all your sort of electronic conveniences are also potentially, you know, electronic vulnerabilities, you know, where you might, you know, in the worst case, like, you know, lose your personal information, or, you know, your credit card number. And now they're starting to think even in the real worst case, you might get in a car crash, you might die.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and I think something that's it's a super interesting question to me, because I also think part of our mission needs to be to provide some level of truth as well, right? That you know, we all know fear sells an amazing amount of advertising dollars, right? I mean, and every time you turn around, the sky is falling and everybody's going to take control of your minivan and crash you and your children into the side of a brick wall at 300 miles an hour or something of this nature, right? So I think that while it's all true, and I think that our team is trying to do is provide something semblance of security for people, it's also to make sure that we can decipher through the truth and let people know where their vehicle really stands. I mean, you know, just because you drive your vehicle down the road doesn't mean some guy is going to pull up next to you and hack your car and everybody dies. I mean, it, you know, so I think there is both sides to this for us, that we're in it to make sure that the OEMs are somewhat protected as well, because we've not run across, I mean, certainly, Jack, I'm sure, will confirm this. We've not run across a single company that's come to us and said, oh, we don't care about security. Who cares? No one can hack the company, right? I mean, they care. They're spending millions and millions of dollars. You know, Ford especially, like, it's no secret, right? Ford has their big innovation center in Palo Alto. You know, they are moving further and further toward being a computer company, hiring hundreds of developers and people. They care about this a great deal. They do not want anyone injured or harmed. I mean, that isn't their game plan. And so, you know, I think part of that spreading the you know, Jack kind of was just alluding to it, spreading the word correctly is also part of our mission, making sure people are honestly aware that this isn't just a Facebook posting to get you scared, you know?
Yeah, and I think one of the things, too, you mentioned earlier was, you know, if this takes, you know, a whole rack of servers, $1 million and a PhD to actually do, the priority of that vuln, the risk there goes way down, obviously. And it's something we battle all the time, and not just for, obviously, people, but businesses of, like, Yeah. If you want, we'll find you a million vulnerabilities in your network.
Right.
Like, that's that's easy. It's which ones can be exploited by Metasploit today, you know, and have been around and have a CV, blah, 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 all that stuff. And so I'm wondering, too, are we moving? And you just mentioned something, and I want to get back to it around the Ford moving to more of a computer company, because I actually think that brings in the topic, too, of autonomous cars and all that stuff. And I want to go there. But first, I'm wondering, just in your opinion, as you're looking at this stuff, you know, are we going to see a whole, how are the manufacturer, I guess, and the suppliers going to weed out these vulnerabilities? Is it going to be the same way we do it for, you know, your typical network infrastructure, and they're just going to do their vuln scanning and their testing, and, you know, we're going to have a better and open community about these, all of these vulns that are out there? Or do you think that this is unique enough and niche enough that there has to be almost a cottage industry that grows up around it?
It's interesting. I don't necessarily think that how a cottage industry grows and this idea of having a sort of standardized practice around this, I don't think that they're actually at odds, right? I think you start out sort of doing this in a cottage industry fashion, but invite people to join you to help you make it better. And in doing so, you make your practices and your characterizations more codified, more fleshed out, if that makes sense. And that's very much what we're doing, right? And that's why we seek input from people like Craig. And in fact, we have this what I describe as a sort of virtuous cycle of research and implementation. And to that end, right, Craig and I actually just started talking about putting on a car hackathon early next year.
Cool.
The idea being, right, that you get people that are interested in this field from a research perspective all together, and they pool their ideas, and now these ideas become public knowledge, right? And then you figure out how can you take the things that people have found and sort of codify them into, okay, now these are the things that we look at when cars come to our lab for analysis, right? So to me, right, it goes from, people like us doing these sort of like specialized engagements where you learn into hopefully practices that can be disseminated throughout, you know, the field so that it's not just us doing this.
Right.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. And to paraphrase, I think it's, you know, especially for people who maybe haven't dealt with, obviously most people who haven't dealt with the automotive side of this, they're probably dealing with the quote unquote traditional, at this point, old fashioned network infrastructure, maybe mobile, maybe IoT, whatever you want to consider that, what that is. But really what you're talking about too is like opening this up to as many people as possible, finding out all the vulnerabilities. And then, you know, I think that the challenge there, and we obviously saw it in our other worlds, is the disclosure and how that's done with the manufacturers, with the, you know, and I think that's where, if we can codify that and get good at it overall, I think then to I think it was Jack earlier, but of, we're not here to like then go to the press with this.
Right.
Like, that's not our point, guys. Like, we're going to have a hackathon, but so that we can all learn some stuff and we'll give you all the data so you can go back and fix it. We don't want to go to necessarily, and that's where I think the hack, you know, the big kind of hack PR stuff may, and my communications team may listen to this and slap me, but you know, they may, you know, I just think that stuff doesn't always do, it's fun to read, but it doesn't always do us the most good.
You know, and to jump in, that's exactly like what I was alluding to earlier. One of the reasons when Jack and I kind of selected to bring this program to UL was that we get to be insulated from that. You know, we're not looking for a buyout. Mm. So we're not taking some, you know, inflammatory situation, blowing it out of proportion, going to the New York Times and hoping that a, you know, car company X buys us out to one, to shut us up and or, you know, to roll our technology into them or whatever the case is. We've been successful in, you know, in infiltrating vehicles already and exposing vulnerabilities. And we're going directly to those manufacturers and people and saying, you know, we're not looking for a buyout. We're saying, hey, look what we found. Here's some information. And in many cases, we've given it to them free and said, here's what we found. Give a look, guys. You know, go fix it and then come back to us later if you want. And I think that what you said, it's, you know, it's companies like yours. I mean, like Rapid7 here coming forward and saying, let's all have a conversation around this. It's real and it's important, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely important stuff. So let's flip, because the concept of, you know, we talked about Ford, the Innovation Center, certainly extremely well known, and what they're doing there. But, you know, this isn't just about the fact that, you know, things are connected and get, you know, cool stuff to happen in my car and all that stuff. We are approaching this time where ultimately I'm going to get into an Uber, I'm going to get into a Tesla, I'm going to get into some car that's going to just drive me somewhere by myself. Does this concept of the whole car being more of a technology center and the autonomous nature of the whole thing, do you guys think that that's just going to, that's just going to explode this even more? Or do you think we're going to get ahead of it now because we're actually thinking about it piece by piece and then we can look at it from a bigger perspective and actually have something that potentially is more safe?
My hope is that this represents an opportunity to get ahead of it and not be reactive, but be proactive. And one of the reasons that I believe this is take connected car, right? Take autonomous vehicles, right?
Yeah.
If you, so autonomous vehicles all will, you know, like theoretically, right? You know, there are the rules of the road. You know, you signal when you change lanes, and there's a certain speed limit, and there's a follow distance. But even within that, there's a lot of variance, right? And so to some extent, it's my belief that autonomous vehicle system manufacturers, designers are going to want to sort of standardize on behavior, right? Because if you have lots of different algorithms all like sort of interoperating on the same highways, like you might get really chaotic, unpredictable behavior. And so the need to consider whether or not a sort of standard algorithm even needs to exist, to me is an indicator of forward thinking, you know, thinking about the problems, the weird emergent problems before they even happen, well before they even happen. And if you're doing that in that avenue, you're probably doing that overall. Huh. That's my hope. And that's, I know that's really high level and fluffy, but that's just my personal belief.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I also think one thing we're seeing interesting is the whole notion of the autonomous vehicle, bringing all this information to light. You know, I think it's causing the OEMs to look at other industries that have had more, say, interaction with the notion of autonomous, being like, you know, like an aerospace sort of situation. Planes have been landing themselves and taking off for quite a few years now, and looking at safety protocols that are implemented there. So I think hopefully UL, like we have a seat at the table to sort of say, let's look at this as a bigger picture now. And I think that my hope is, I think, similar to what Jack said. I think I'm hoping we're kind of ahead of the game, and looking at these permutation parameters is causing industries to look at other verticals as well.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And I think the user behavior part is really interesting. And whether there's going to be, because obviously we have kind of user behavior algorithms, analytics, whatever you want to call it, in the network world of, you know, if Kyle's laptop is in Paris 1 hour after it logged in Palo Alto, that's probably, that's a bizarre behavior. And I would imagine there's going to be some signatures left by folks as well from a user behavior standpoint inside of the logs that are being emitted from those vehicles as well. So that'll be fun to watch.
I was going to say, I bet, you know, if we're doing things like collecting logs in real time, which would be like probably really useful if you don't mind the sort of big brothery aspect of it, but putting that aside, that would probably serve as a really effective, like DUI detector. Like, you've been swerving and braking kind of hard and accelerating weird. Like, hey, go get a CHP on this guy.
Right. Yeah.
I want him to track how many people get motion sickness and throw up in the car. That's my
interest. Well, I'm sure.
You're going to get all this free time. Everybody says, look at all this work you can do. Yeah, you ever tried reading a book in a car? I'll puke my brains out.
So exactly.
Good luck with that. Right?
My wife is like that. And they could probably tell whether I'm yelling at my kids in the backseat or not. depending on, I don't know, but at some point they'll have my heart rate, right? Because they'll just get that from the Fitbit. But yeah, now we're encroaching into crazy Big Brother territory.
We for sure thought that you were drunk when we pulled you over, but now we see that you're just yelling at your kids.
Exactly. Now we see you have four kids. We don't blame you. Right. So this actually, speaking of Big Brother, here's my good segue. Government regulation. And you know, obviously the automotive industry has been highly regulated for a long time, especially around safety. And of course around emissions and things like that. Unlike our network world, where there aren't a ton in general. And that's something that, you know, that's another debate for another time, but maybe this is already happening and you guys can just kind of correct me and put me on the right path. But are, you know, government bodies looking at kind of the regulation of this from a cybersecurity perspective for automotive?
Most definitely. The sort of most notable.
That's like absolutely with a period at the end of it.
All right. Cool.
Yeah.
Or maybe cool. I don't know.
Is the 2015 Spy Car Act. That's like, it's in committee right now, and you know how bills move, like glacially. But the fact that it was even proposed and it is in committee is actually really interesting, because it wants to parameterize sort of like different aspects of cybersecurity and be able to literally put a sticker on a vehicle that says this vehicle is cyber secure, whatever that's supposed to mean. Because obviously nothing is totally secure.
Of course. Right.
So that's really interesting and different from the sort of network world, right? This is,
yeah.
This offers, you know, an assurance of cybersecurity, for the automotive world.
Yeah.
It's been, and it's another one of those, like, it's been interesting for us. I think Jack will concur here that being at UL, it's interesting. Like, you know, not terribly long ago, there was, I don't remember the politician's name. I kind of don't actually care what his name is, but stood on the steps of the White House and said, you know, what we need is a UL-style cybersecurity mark, right? Mm. Because UL's, you know, like you had mentioned earlier that, you know, you worked with UL on some number. You know, Jack and I hear these numbers all the time because we're software here at UL. People are like 87-165-428DB, and Jack and I are like, what the hell are they talking about? Like,
yeah.
But the point is, you know, it's been around so long and it has a seat at the table for those standards. It's been really nice for Jack and I, you know, with the DOT or assorted agencies, they'll take our phone call, you know, and they talk to us. They're interested in our thoughts and our approach because the company's known for writing standards. And I think that's another nice thing for us to say that we're not saying we're looking for all this revenue generation. We're saying we can have an actual effect, you know?
Yeah. And it's been, you know, I'll be honest, it's been frustrating as a traditional network, you know, security guy who's been in it for a long time and obviously working with folks, you know, in your organization years ago with other standards organization, other, you know, nonprofits and everything. And we just don't see that necessarily in network security. You don't get a router or switch and that's been kind of certified. And it's because of what you said earlier too. Like, great, I have a sticker about cybersecurity. That's just, you know, it's just time. You know, until someone figures out the vulnerability.
Absolutely.
That's all it is, right? And so, and we all know that, and quite frankly, we need to be more honest about it, and I think that's really what you guys are talking about as well, is like opening this up, shedding the light. We all believe, you know, well, many of us believe that from a security perspective, and I think that if we continue down that path, I think that will be important. So two more questions for you guys, and I know I'm taking you over time, but this has been an awesome conversation.
It's all right.
Great stuff, man.
It's been fun.
What's a typical user to do? And by, you know, a typical driver, I guess, in this case, to do. What should I wear? You know, and honestly, I'm asking this personally. I'm out buying a new car, I haven't bought a new car in 10 years, and so technology is crazy, right? Yet I also work in security, and so I think about these things all the time, but. In 2016, 2017, you know, what's a guy to do when they're out, you know, getting sold a bunch of goods by a car salesman?
So, and this doesn't have to do with getting a new car, but, you know, people want to be more ecologically aware. And so a lot of people are buying these, you know, like devices with these knockoff ELM 327 chips that plug into the OBD2 port and say connect with your phone over a little like ad hoc wireless network that device that you just plugged in. Makes available, and it's a totally like open network, and you can open up a, you know, essentially a telnet console to that device. I mean, if you're half savvy, right, you can do like port scan thing and like, oh look,
yeah,
it's got these ports open, right? And then you can literally do anything on that, right? You can dump the CAN bus, you can put commands on the CAN bus, right? You could potentially reflash ECUs that way, right? The point being, don't use those. those are really dangerous. I don't recommend those.
Yeah.
So I have a 1974, you know, Triumph TR6. So when the apocalypse comes, I'm ready.
You are all set.
That's and my then, advice. But I can't even turn the windshield wipers on in that car half the time because the horn goes off. So you're like, yeah, well, we're good.
But yeah, but that's no safer than me running your windshield wipers, right?
It's a different kind of safe, no?
Yeah.
No, you know what? But, so one of the things, I actually, you know, it's funny because of what I do, and I actually, it's funny, is I'm a complete car nut, like from old cars to new cars, I love them. And one of the things I love at UL is we have an opportunity, we get a lot of really fancy cars in here to play with for this department, and they have to be drive test over the weekend, right? What can you do? I have to take them over to the beautiful Marin County and make sure they're safe, you know?
Yeah, so, there you go.
So when the $100,000 Range Rover has to go get driven around, I have to find a source for this guy.
You sacrifice. But, that's what
I do. I throw myself on the ground of the sacrificial security lamb for these people. But really, you know, friends and family kind of ask me that question, and I tell them, go buy the car you want, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, we're all out here trying to do the best we can. The automotive companies don't want their cars hacked. They're trying to stop that. They are working with people like us, with people like you guys. And you know, go buy a car that you're going to enjoy. I think maybe Jack's got some solid advice there. When it comes to these third-party, you know, dongle things and stuff, I would probably just avoid that for now. But, I mean, you know, your car is itself, man. Buy something you can afford and you enjoy, and, yep. and don't fear the world that much.
And to be really practical, like aside from, you know, and make sure you take your car to Marin County and like cruise around and get the top down and be cool. From a very practical standpoint, there are other things you can do. Like, let's say your car it has a Wi-Fi hotspot, right? So it uses its telematics unit to connect you to the internet. If you can configure your like in cabin Wi-Fi, you know, like really simple things that like I think half savvy people know to do, but maybe not might not forget to do.
Yeah.
If you have like make sure that your car's AP isn't using WEP, right? Mm-hmm. Or if it's using WPA2, like make sure that like it's not like it doesn't have like WPS enabled. Like really, really simple stuff. Make sure it has a sufficiently long password that's reasonably complicated that you can't look up in some dictionary.
So treat your car like you treat your house.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean that's what it comes down to.
Perfect. You looking for a job? We're hiring.
There you go. Yeah. Well, I'll definitely send this to my boss. So last question, because you guys obviously have a passion about this stuff, but where do you go to get information about this? If someone's listening to this and maybe they've been doing more of the traditional kind of security stuff, but it seems interesting, they want to be the next Craig Smith. You know, where do people go? What's your go-to sources?
That's all you.
Gosh,
do.
There's so many. I mean, Black Hat makes the slides available. That's a huge one for me. Gosh, Google. There's a ton of good information. I mean, like Rapid7 has like really good information.
Aw, shucks.
sure. And you other know, people like
I've
like
got
individuals
the car
like
handbook on my desk.
Yeah, there you literally. Go. That's a good one.
Like Michael Osman, you know, like there are particular people that I follow. Cool. Like Mike Osman. I check out his talks because he's, for example, always got something good, or Mike Ryan in the Bluetooth space, you know, like this. So there are particular people that I sort of follow. Like I'm actually cyber stalking them, but like don't tell them that.
but they're
such a font of good information. And then particular conferences like Black Hat. Black Hat's really powerful, or like TourCon, you know? Yeah.
Well, there's obviously a big, there's a big thirst for it out there. Like I said, you know, and wrapping this up of, when Craig was speaking about kind of hacking your car, you know, that was really one of the more popular sessions. And most of the people in there were not people who would be in this industry at all. And so I do think that there's just a flavor for it. And I think that's great. And that goes back to opening this up and making sure that we're all doing this stuff. So Rob, Jack, awesome conversation. Really, really enjoyed it. Just thank you for joining us. It was a pleasure.
Kyle,
we can't thank you enough, man.
Pleasure was ours.
Stay in touch.
Awesome. Yeah, please. Definitely keep in touch.